visitors with us. We're glad that you're here. We have been doing a series of lessons on why I believe, or questions that the people might have in regard to their faith. We have looked at why I believe in God and why I believe that the Bible is the Word of God. And today we want to pick up with this series and talk about why I believe in Jesus. Does not seem to happen too often, but occasionally there will be some that was of those that are not sure that there even was a Jesus that existed in the first century. Typically, the greater problem is that people are not sure that Jesus was God. And the explanation that some have is that Jesus did live, but he was a good man, a moral man, and he taught some good things, and his teachings were good and ought to be followed. And usually that's a reference to commands like love your neighbor as yourself and do not judge. But is this really an acceptable way of looking at Christ? And can we see him as, just a man who had good teachings and was a great philosopher and had some good things to say, that if people would do those things, people would be better off, but he wasn't God? So for this lesson, we'll consider why we need to believe that there was a Jesus who walked on this earth in the first century, and why we must believe that he is the Son of God. So there are some historical references concerning Jesus, and what we see is that we recognize, looking at history, that there really was a Jesus. We looked in the last lesson that we could depend on the Bible as a valid historical document, and it accurately records history. And although it's not really a history book, but when you look at it compared to history, there's things that line up. And so, we could also point out here, since we looked last week at the Bible being valid and valid historically, and it records Jesus historically, we just stop the lesson here and say, well, it recorded that about him. It says there's a Jesus, and we think we can depend on the scriptures as being accurate, and so we're going to count it as accurate and just stop the lesson right here. But there's other secular historians and authorities who declare that there was a Jesus who lived in the first century. We've already looked in our in our lesson books that we've been looking at this character, author named Tacitus, who is considered the greatest historian of ancient Rome, who wrote the Annals of Rome. And he said this is the context here, is he's referencing the blaming of the Christians for setting Rome on fire. And so we know that in history that the Christians were persecuted because they were blamed for setting Rome on fire, and they didn't really do that. But what is said here by Tacitus, it says, but not all the relief that could come from man, not all the bounties that the prince could bestow, nor all the atonements which could be presented to the gods, availed to relieve Nero from the infamy of being believed to have ordered the conflagration, the fire of Rome. So he's saying that everybody believed that Nero was the one that did it, even though there's other excuses. Hence, to suppress the rumor, he falsely charged with the guilt and punished those with the most exquisite tortures, the persons commonly known, commonly called Christians, who were hated for their enormities. Christus, the founder of the name, was put to death by Pontius Pilate, procurator of Judea in the reign of Tiberius. But the Perconius superstition, repressed for a time, broke out again, not only through Judea where the mischief originated, but through the city of Rome also. So here he's talking about the idea that Rome was set on fire by the Christians, and that's what Nero would have people believe. But he's saying that blame did not stick to the Christians, even though they were tortured. But you see the reference here to Christus or Christ. He's saying that Christ was the founder of the Christians, and he was put to death by Pontius Pilate. So this Roman historian is echoing what we see in the Bible that happened. So the existence of Jesus and the death of Jesus by Pontius Pilate is related by another historian. Josephus is another historian, which we've looked at, and he would certainly not have any reason to promote Jesus because he was a Jew. He would not have any reason to promote Christians, but here's what he said about Jesus. He said, "Now, there was about this time Jesus, a wise man, for he was a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. When Pilate, as the suggestion of the principal men among us, had condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at the first did not forsake him, and the tribe of Christians so named from him are not extinct at this day." And so here is a Jewish historian that is accurately depicting what it was that happened to Jesus, that he was put to death on the cross, and that there were many who followed him before he was put to death, and many followed him after he was put to death. And at the time of the writing of this, Josephus said that that group of people is not extinct to this day. So here we have two major historians that are looked at with credibility by scholars in the world. One is a Roman scholar and another is a Jewish scholar that are both pointing out that Jesus was indeed a man who lived and he died a cruel death at the cross. And so these are just two of more than seven historical references to Jesus that you can find in Jewish literature. Other Jewish literature mention Jesus sparingly, but they support the claim that Jesus was a healer and that he was a miracle worker, and that of course a lot of the Jewish literature ascribes these miracles to sorcery. Go figure, which would be expected by those who were enemies of Jesus. We see the same thing in the Scriptures. They want to attribute, Jesus' power to the devil. But you see that Jesus was somebody who died, who lived, and you had to, say something about him. You had to acknowledge that his presence, it validates that there was a Jesus and that he was performing signs and wonders and miracles in the first century. And so just this should be enough to validate that there was a Jesus and that the record that the Bible gives concerning Jesus is accurate. Now, Jesus, claimed to be God. In Matthew chapter 14, verse 33, it says, "Those in the boat worshipped him and said, 'Truly, you are the Son of God.'" So we need to determine if Jesus was God. Now, one of the more fascinating charges that have been levied in recent years is to say that Jesus never claimed to be God. And if you remember several years ago when the Da Vinci Code was something that was really popular in this book, and there was a movie that was made about it. And the idea here that the author of the Da Vinci Code says is that Jesus never really claimed to be God, called God, but he claimed to be the Son of Man. And so it makes the distinction between Son of God and Son of Man that Jesus never really claimed to be Son of God. Well, did Jesus think that he was God, or was Jesus God? It's certainly important for us to know without a doubt that Jesus did claim to be God. And you consider the following passages like we see right here, Matthew chapter 14, the recording of Jesus walking on the water is recorded. And this, of course, was a great sign and miracle that he was able to walk upon the Sea of Galilee during a storm. And when he comes to the boat where the disciples are sitting, this is what they said, "Truly you are the Son of God." And Jesus says, "Oh, well, no, I'm not. I'm the Son of Man." No, he accepted that. He did not deny the assessment. He did not reject their worship. And he accepted the worship and the statement that they made. In John chapter 10 and verse 33, it says, "The Jews answered him, 'It is not for a good work that we are going to stone you, but for blasphemy, because you, being a man, make yourself God.'" So there's a clear understanding of the enemies of Jesus is that he was claiming to be God. And that And the enemies of Jesus recognized that Jesus was claiming to be God. It wasn't simply the disciples that had this idea. It was others as well. In John chapter 5, verse 17. John chapter 5, verse 17. It says, Jesus answered them, "My Father is working until now, and I am working." This is why the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. And so they see this as a claim. They see that Jesus is claiming to be the Son of God, that he had declared himself to be equal with God. And the Jews understood this. And so, you know, what about this idea that Jesus was calling himself the Son of Man, as the Da Vinci Code would say, makes a distinction between that. He calls himself the Son of Man more than he calls himself the Son of God. Well, was Jesus trying to say there that he was a mere man? You know, not at all. What we need to remember is that Jesus was teaching the Jewish people. The phrase Son of Man had a very powerful meaning, and it was rooted in the prophecy of Daniel in Daniel chapter 7, verse 13. Daniel says, "I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one like a Son of Man, and he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and a glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom come, or kingdom one that shall not be destroyed." And so here you see what Son of Man means. Son of Man is something that is very powerful when you look at this prophecy. The Son of Man here is pictured as one that goes into heaven, where the Father, the Ancient of Days, resides. And the Son of Man receives dominion and glory and power and a kingdom. And what does that mean? Well, it means everybody's subjugated to him. So when Jesus says he's the Son of Man, he's, "Oh, I'm just an ordinary man." No, that's not what he's saying. He say, "I fulfill this prophecy that Daniel has made." Jesus isn't calling himself human. He's calling himself the prophesied Messiah, the Son of Man, who is God. And if Jesus only claimed to be a man, well, there would be no reason for the Jews to take his life, right? If he was going around, "I'm a man, I'm a man, I'm a man." That's not what he did. There were many, many teachers, many rabbis over the centuries that were teaching people the way of the Lord. And if Jesus was just a man going around teaching the way of the Lord, he would have been no different than some of the others that had come before him. He was different because he was the Son of Man. He was different because he was the Son of God. He claimed to be the Son of God, and the enemies of his day recognized that's what he was saying, and they didn't like it. So what are some of the proofs that Jesus was God? First of all, we see the miracles. We've already noted that even, you know, secular historical writings outside of the Scriptures record that Jesus was performing miracles and healings and signs and wonders, and that certainly fits with what we see in the Scriptures that show us what Jesus was doing. It wasn't just the disciples that saw this. It wasn't just the disciples that accepted this. Even the enemies of Jesus realized that Jesus was performing miracles, and that was something that couldn't be denied. And in the Scripture that we read this morning in John chapter 9, rather lengthy reading to look at the whole thing, but I think recently we've had somebody, you know, talk about that. But in John chapter 9, what we see is that the Jewish leaders are questioning this man because they don't believe that Jesus can... they don't want to believe that Jesus can do something like this. This man who was born blind apparently is healed. And so they're trying to figure out, is this the guy? Is this the man? And so they go and get his parents to see, is this the man who was really born blind? And yes, this is our son. And so the leaders are now in a bind because the miracle can't be disproven. And so what they do then is they start slandering Jesus as a sinner, and they end up, you know, questioning the blind man, and the blind man, you know, says, "You know, why are you asking me all these questions? Do you also want to be one of his disciples?" And or he ends up, you know, getting kicked out of the Jewish community. But the point here is that the miracle is undeniable. You know, they're trying to find some reason to deny it, and they can't. Everybody saw it. Everybody knows that this is the man. And Jesus did so many of these miracles that even secular historical writers record Jesus as a healer and a miracle worker, although some of them, depending on their point of view, attribute it to sorcery. But interesting, though, that we have a historical Jesus that's recorded outside of the Scriptures, and that the signs and wonders that He do are part of that narrative outside of the Bible. So did Jesus live? Yes. Did Jesus perform miracles? Yes. Did Jesus say that He was the Son of God? Yes. Another reason that we believe that Jesus was God is because He was sinless. That would be an expectation that we would have of a person who claimed to be God, is that He would live a perfect life and that He would not break His own laws. The Jewish leaders tried very hard to find some kind of charges against Jesus that they could make so that they could have Him killed. The chief priests, the Sanhedrin, they were looking for false testimony even. Since they couldn't really find anything that would stick that was valid, then they looked for people to bear false witness concerning Him. And they had a hard time even with that. In Matthew chapter 26, verses 59 and 60, Matthew chapter 26, verses 59 and 60, says, "Now the chief priests and the whole council were seeking false testimony against Jesus, that they might put Him to death, but they found none, though many false witnesses came forward. At last, two came forward and said, 'This man said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days.'" And so, that was rather weak as far as, Jesus did say that, and they totally misunderstood what it was that He was saying. But, is that the best you can do, is to say that he could tear the temple down and rebuild it in 3 days? Very, very weak, flimsy evidence. And also, Pilate, in Luke chapter 23, verses 14 through 16, what was Pilate's opinion of Jesus? So verse 13 says, "Pilate then called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people and said to them, 'You have brought me this man as one who is misleading the people. And after examining him before you, behold, I did not find the man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us, saying, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him.'" So Pilate found no basis for the Jewish charges against Jesus, and so Jesus lived a sinless life. And you can guarantee that if there was something that Jesus did that did equate to sin, that somebody would have found it as hard as they were looking for it. Another reason that we should believe in Jesus and have proof that Jesus was God is all the fulfilled prophecies, and this is probably one of the most amazing things that we can see. The first covenant was given to the Jews, and they were told what to expect when the Messiah came. And there were more than 300 references in the Old Testament to the coming Messiah. And Jesus fulfilled all of these prophecies. But what's interesting is after the fact, some suggested, well, Jesus was a pretender who did things to fulfill the prophecy, to substantiate his claim. So is that really possible that Jesus could have known what all the prophecies were? Of course he couldn't know. But if he knew what all those were, that he was going to do something to make those things happen. Well, it'd be kind of hard to control your place of birth, before you're born. And so, if Jesus was going to make all those prophecies come true, the place of his birth, the place of his death, how he would die, what soldiers would say, what soldiers would do, the way that he was buried, or the lineage that he was born into, it was very masterful that he would be able to manipulate all that to happen so that he could somehow fake fulfilling all of these prophecies. It's not possible. And these things had been previously prophesied. Some might suggest, it was just random chance. or luck that Jesus happened to fulfill all these prophecies? Well, statisticians have done some calculations for us on the odds of these things happening by chance. And they say that you find the chance that any man could have lived to the present time and fulfilled 8 of these prophecies is 1 in 10 to the 17th power. So that's a 1 with 17 zeros after it. When you consider 48 prophecies, you find the chance that any one man could fulfill all 48 prophecies to be 10 to the 157th power. That's a 1 with 157 zeros after it. So you get the picture here that this is impossible. And I'm talking about 48, and there's 300 prophecies of Jesus. So it's just not statistically possible that somebody could fulfill all of those or to fake that. And so the fulfilled prophecies that Jesus fulfilled are simply amazing. Just a list. I'm not going to read a whole list of all the prophecies, but I'm going to read you a few of them here that we know. He will reconcile people to God. You know, Genesis 3, he would crush evil. He would be a descendant of Abraham. He would be a descendant of Abraham's son Isaac, be a descendant of Abraham's son Jacob. He would be a descendant of Jacob's son Judah. He would be a descendant of Jesse, a descendant of Judah. He would be a descendant of Jesse's son, King David. And he would appear after the rebuilding of Jerusalem. He would be born in Bethlehem. His virgin birth was foretold by Isaiah. He would be called Emmanuel. He would be preceded by a forerunner. He would appear in Galilee, be a light to the Gentiles. He would perform miracles. He would teach in parables. He would be a prophet like Moses. He would be humble and meek. He would be called God's son. He would enter Jerusalem while riding on a donkey. He would be rejected. He would be despised. He would be oppressed. He would be silent before his accusers. He would be mocked by people. He would be beaten and spat upon. He would be hated without reason. He would be hated without a cause. His hands and feet would be pierced. His suffering would include thirst. He would be forsaken. He would suffer for the sins of others. He would bring it into sin. He would be buried in the tomb of a wealthy man. And he'd be a cornerstone. And so it just goes on and on, all the things that are prophesied about Jesus Christ. And so what does that mean to us? Well, it means you have a choice. You have a couple of options concerning Jesus. Either his claims are true about being God or his claims are false. Either what he said about himself is true or it's false. And if his claims are false, then there are only a couple of options. Either he was a liar, knowing that he was not God, but tried to deceive everybody. Or he was crazy, believing he was God, but he really wasn't. And if he was a liar, he was not a good man. He was a liar, he was not a good moral man. He tried to deceive the world, claiming to be something that he wasn't. He would be a liar. But he would also be a fool because he died for a reason that was not true. If he knew that he was a liar, do you think he would have succumbed to the death or went to the cross, knowing that all he had to do was tell the truth? If he was a liar, how do you explain the miracles? How do you explain the profound teaching that he left? How do you explain his example? It's just not possible for a selfish, deceitful, depraved person to invent this and consistently maintain himself from beginning to the end as someone of a pure and noble character, and those things last until this day. And the other option is that he was just insane. He was so deluded that he thought he was God, but he really wasn't. So, you know, the same problems exist if you consider that option. How can somebody so deranged live so perfectly and perform miracles and teach what he taught. It just doesn't make any sense that he would be deranged like that. So that leaves you with the other option, is that Jesus is Lord and that he really is God. He wasn't merely just a good man. He claimed to be God, and by claiming to be God, he put us in a situation where we need to believe whether he is or not. And so we need to accept him as Lord. I'd like to read something for you that is called One Solitary Life. And maybe you've heard it before. Here is a man who was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant woman. He grew up in another village. He worked in a carpenter shop until he was 30. Then for 3 years, he was an itinerant preacher. He never owned a home. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never had a family. He never went to college. He never put his foot inside a big city. He never traveled 200 miles from the place he was born. He never did one of the things that usually accompany greatness. He had no credentials but himself. While still a young man, the tide of popular opinion turned against him. His friends ran away. One of them denied him. He was turned over to his enemies. He went through the mockery of a trial. He was nailed upon a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, his executioners gambled for the only piece of property that he had on earth, his coat. When he was dead, he was laid in a borrowed grave through the pity of a friend. 19 long centuries have come and gone, and today he is the centerpiece of the human race and leader of the column of progress. I am far within the mark when I say that all the armies that ever marched, all the navies that were ever built, all the parliaments that have ever sat, and all of the kings that ever reigned put together have not affected the life of man upon this earth as powerfully as has this one solitary life. We need to believe in Jesus Christ. He was real. He walked upon this earth. He's the Son of God. And he died for you and wants you to be in heaven with him. If we can help you in any way, respond to the invitation. I invite you to come while we stand together and sing.